Welcome to the Fan Pregame here on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590. The Fan, happy Friday. We've got a couple things to get you set for tonight, including Edmonton-Dallas Game 2. We'll have Mark Spector in a few moments, our SportsCenter columnist, to walk us through how the Oilers can get back in this thing. They're just down 1-0, but, you know, still, it was a bit of a tough 1-0.
I guess we've grown accustomed to the Oilers just winning games.
Yeah.
They're 8-1 in their last nine before dropping that one the other night. But I think this could be a long series. So not to say it's an emergency just yet, but maybe Spec has a different take on it.
We'll talk to Luke Fox around 6:30, talk about Keith Pelley's MLSE conference a little earlier today, which was up on Sportsnet. We've got lots of articles and lots of clips from it. In the meantime, we'll go through the general tone, what would be next, the confirmation that they probably won't be hiring someone in the presidency role there with Brendan Shanahan leaving, and how this might affect what happens next for the Maple Leafs. And that's it, folks. We got the Blue Jays on the network tonight against the Tampa Bay Rays. That's a Sportsnet 1, a Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, lots to go through with the Pelley press conference. It feels like the most interesting thing, though, might be Leafs adjacent because, of course, he runs MLSE, which obviously has quite a few teams under its label, and what the Leafs are doing and what the Shanahan news means for other teams may be one of the more interesting things about where MLSE is headed under Keith.
Yeah, there were some discussions about, okay, Masai Ujiri and the Raptors and maybe TFC, and they sprinkled that into the Leafs conference today. And obviously, they're all a part of what Keith Pelley would be doing. But I guess the quickest way, the biggest thing I took from it is this is Brad Tree Living's team. This is Craig Berube's team now with more opportunity to have, you know, their fingerprints on everything, which I feel like is a good thing, but also could lead to, I mean, it feels more streamlined, I think, without Brendan Shanahan. But, you know, you're putting the trust into the coach and the GM and some of the department as well, whoever gets to stay.
Yeah, I suppose. I think they want it to be more streamlined. I guess we'll see how it functions when it gets there. But there is one less important chair, I suppose, in the room with Brendan Shanahan. And we'll see if there are fewer chairs, I suppose. Like, we haven't heard from Brad Treliving yet. We know Brad Treliving is going to be instrumental moving forward here. But we know Brad Treliving had a lot of right-hand men and women. And we'll see what that means for everybody else who was involved and who was hired under the Shanahan era. So still a lot to come for the Maple Leafs. It feels like there's many, many questions still after hearing from the very top of the food chain today.
Okay, we'll talk a little later about that with Luke Fox at 6:30. He'll join us in the second part of our show. But let's kick things off with Mark Spector of Sportsnet, of course, joining us. Spec, how's it going?
Oh, doing pretty well. How are y'all doing down there?
Did you get new glasses?
A few weeks ago, but very nice of you to notice.
Hey, did you pick up y'all since you have arrived in Texas? Did you pick up y'all since you arrived in Texas? You threw a little twang on that.
Yeah, here's the deal in Texas. Everybody's y'all, for one, but...
Oh, I really wanted to hear where that was
going. That was
going
to be a good one.
That's disappointing.
Everybody's y'all, but...
I don't know. I can't
honestly,
even fill in the
I
mad
can't, it's
there.
Like a Mad Lib, fill in the blank.
We'll let him do
it. We'll get Spec back in a minute. Oh, he's back. Spec?
Your show. I've been fixing to do your show all afternoon, and here we are.
Okay.
There you go, fixing. I love this. Keep dropping these Texas, I don't know, name drop. I don't have the word.
Sayings.
Maybe you can fill it in for us. Sayings. It would be the perfect way to put it. Okay, game one. Bit of a collapse for the Edmonton Oilers. What happened, and how has it affected the mood in advance of game two?
Their mood is very good. I mean, they're a good team, and they played lots of playoff series, and they lost a game. They'd won 8 out of 9. You know, you don't get to win every night. So I think they take from that game that when the game was being played 5-on-5, they were in definite control for 2 periods. They were up 3-1. They opened the door for Dallas with some penalties, and Dallas kicked that door in. So this, I'm not taking it away from the Stars. They waited 40 minutes, found some opportunity, and they really took it. But if you're the Oilers, you say, well, what happens if we stay out of the box? What happens if we kill a penalty? You know, because 5-on-5, they were the better team, and no one down here would dispute that. So I think they're fine going into game two. They'll try to take the 40 minutes they played in game one and see if they can't do it for 55 or 60 tonight.
I'm glad you went to the penalty kill issues because, you know, it's clearly one of the things that didn't live up to standard for the Edmonton Oilers. And you had a column where you kind of talked about Draisaitl breaking the unwritten rule, kind of calling out that penalty kill. Do you think that comes from a place of frustration or motivation. Like, hey, if I say this, we got to hold ourselves accountable. We need to be better on this. Like, you're kind of leading everyone in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be going a little deep into the psyche of a player. They just lost a game where they gave up three power play goals, and he came out and he said, our PK sucked, and it cost us the game, and we got to get better. I'm not sure he was putting his team on the couch, Chalice, or anything like that. If you know Leon Draisaitl, he's a pretty direct cat. He's very German, if I could say that. He won't, you know, he'll either say it or he won't say anything. He won't give you a word salad, and he won't lead you down the trail and lie to you. He did not choose to not speak about the PK, and there was only one thing to say about that penalty kill unit. It was brutal. So, you know, the unwritten rule, of course, is, and as he said, I'm not even on it, so who am I to say? Well, you're Leon Draisaitl. You know, you can say what you want. I want to say this, you guys. Probably what I'd watch for tonight is the big boys in Edmonton who have, you know, obviously carried this team on a lot of nights. They were really, really good in game one. They did their part. McDavid and Draisaitl were, for 40 minutes, the two best players on the ice, absolutely hands down. It's the role guys, the PK guys, the a couple of defensemen that let the thing down on in game one. And those guys have spent 2 days thinking about how they, you know, the big boys were carrying the ball and the supporting cast kind of dropped it. And that doesn't go over well with the Connor Browns and Brett Kulaks of the world. I think you'll see those guys with a very, very concerted effort in game two.
Well, they've overcome early PK issues before against the LA Kings. It felt like the Kings were scoring every time they got an opportunity early on that series, and they figured out a way. I think they threatened to put McDavid out there just so they had something to think about. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if we're at that spot yet. But they did go, I think, a perfect 0 for 18, or the Oilers were a perfect 18 for 18 against the Stars in the Western Conference Final last year with the PK. Of course, that's not the trajectory they're on right now. Is there an Ekholm-based issue here? Like, if he came back in, if they were able to get Ekholm, if Ekholm does factor in, is he sort of the missing piece? Why is the PK struggling right now?
Yeah, it's struggled even during the season with him, but no doubt about it. Matthias Ekholm is your best defensive defender. Like, he's your best guy when it comes to, he's the first guy over the boards for a penalty kill, for sure. So not having him, yeah, you bet it hurts, man. Like, everyone's missing guys and everyone's got injuries, but you know, don't tell me the Oilers penalty kill doesn't miss Matthias Ekholm. He's a big 6'4" Swedish cat that gets in the way of a lot of pucks, clears a lot of nets, makes good plays to win his battles, and now the puck's down the ice. So, yes, it is partially a Matthias Ekholm thing. I don't think you can say it's not.
How close to seeing Matthias Ekholm are we?
I don't know, really close, you know, really close. The coach, Knobloch, Chris Knobloch and Matthias Ekholm skated in circles as the teams warmed up for the morning skate today and had a long talk. We asked Knobloch about it. He said he was just catching up on family life in the Ekholm house and, you know, how hockey was going for young William Ekholm and things like that. But I think he's due to come back anytime. I could see him coming back for game three, maybe even. He's that close.
Okay, so something for the Oilers to look forward to here, hopefully with a 1-1 series split in Big D. You know, you've been watching McDavid and Draisaitl for some time now. When there is a disappointing result like they had, when you see them glance at each other on the bench, a lot of people making a lot out of that. But even Draisaitl just coming out and talking and being very honest about his expectations for not only himself but others on the team, do you just naturally, in the position you're in, brace for like a big-time McDavid and Draisaitl game?
Well, yeah, it's not really about what they say, but it's when a big game is required. You know, out west, folks, we don't have a problem with our big guys showing up when you need them, right? Yeah. These two guys, like, if you'd have told me 6 months ago the Oilers are going to be in a Western Conference Final and they were down 1-0, I'd tell you watch out for 29-97 in game two, because this is where they get counted in these games. You don't always win. You know, they don't always score, but those two guys, they absolutely show up when required, and tonight's one of those nights, so keep your eye on them.
How confident do you feel in Stuart Skinner showing up? You know, this postseason has been a roller coaster. It's either no goals against or six goals against. Is there going to be a big-time goaltending regret when you look back at the trade deadline at maybe somebody that was available, or is this just the way you got to ride this one out?
Yeah, I don't think so. I know that tons of people disagree with me, and every stats person will tell you that his stats aren't good, and I can read stats too, so I know what a save percentage is. But I'm a guy that kind of looks at the team. How did the team play in front of him? You know, when this team plays well and rolls out a proper defensive effort, he just put together eight periods of scoreless hockey behind a good hockey team. You know, when their PK lets six guys stand in front of the net, when they take three penalties in 5 minutes, when you can't even see the goalie while the shot's going in, there's so many guys in front of him. Sure, he's not making that save, but most guys aren't, you know? So I know they rode him to game seven of a Stanley Cup final. I know cups have been won with Darcy Kemper and Corey Crawfords, guys who weren't household names, the Osgoods, the who's the other cat, the Finnish guy in
Niemi?
Chicago.
Antti Niemi,
thank you. You know, so I'm not telling you he's the top five goalie in the league. That's not what I'm here to say. I am here to say when the team plays a championship level of hockey, he gives them more than enough saves to win that championship. Last year they got to game seven. He went out on the road and let in two. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the definition of giving your team a chance to win. Could he have had a shutout? I guess. But that's not the guy he is. He's not Bobrovsky. You know, he's not, Shesterkin. But he's good enough to win with, and I think the Oilers feel the same way.
What's the latest on Pickard?
I don't know. He's not even here. So that's not good, right? That's not good. I don't think Pickard's a better goalie than Skinner, right? They've played, unfortunately for Skinner, when the playoffs started, they rolled out two absolute dogs of games in front of him in LA. And then Pickard came in for game three and the team said, holy man, we're down 2-0. We better start playing. They started playing really well. Pickard gave them saves and they went from there. But long story, Pickard's not ready to play yet. And I don't think anyone's waiting for that white horse to come over the horizon here at any time soon.
Yeehaw. Let's keep talking about injuries and asking about Connor Brown. I saw maybe game time decision. Do you have anything new for us?
Yeah, no, he's supposed to play tonight.
Okay.
Blocked a shot in the Vegas series, has a bad foot, just staying off it is all we can see. I watched him skate in game one. He looked like he's skating fine, but you know, the playoffs, like, I don't know if they're, you know, do they still give guys needles in 2025? They used to.
Probably.
I think so. There's been a lot of miracle comebacks.
There's some cortisone happening here.
So he's one of those guys now. He probably won't practice the rest of the way. And he's one of those penalty kill guys. That's his thing here. Like, if they had captains of the penalty killing unit, him and Janmark could be two of them. And there's another couple of guys that probably are playing a little bit guilty tonight.
There you go. Not only expected to play, but expected to answer the bell. Leon Draisaitl,
yes.
Bell, maybe more specifically.
Answer the bell.
Obviously, we're watching hockey, Spec, so I know what's happening in Florida. But how much do you think the Oilers crave? Again, you got to get past Dallas first. But, like, would they prefer? Is that the preference? Do you want the next crack back at the Florida Panthers in the Stanley Cup final? Is that the perfect scenario for the Edmonton Oilers?
You know, first of all, I'll preface it by saying, talk about a question you'd never go in the dressing room and ask a hockey player.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, fire that at Draisaitl for me.
Yeah, how's that Stanley Cup final sound?
So for me to say I know what they want would be a complete lie. Mm-hmm. I'll say this. They're not afraid of Florida, and I think everyone should be. You just watch them play. Like, they're such a team. Look at Carolina. They're barely in the same rink with them here. I don't think the Oilers are afraid of them. I think the Oilers, looking back on last year, they blew that series in the first three games, not game seven. They were right with them. So I don't think they're afraid of them. I'm not going to answer the question who they rather play. You know, give me if they
win.
What
about the market feeling then? Because you're not in their heads. But that's not what's.
Listen, Carolina is about the third best team in that Eastern final. Mm-hmm. So you ask the market, they'd rather play Carolina every day.
Okay. Speaking of market, you know, last year we talked a lot about this being Canada's team. I think there was a commercial voice by Chris Cuthbert that was like, let's bring the cup home to Canada. And I haven't heard us say Canada's.
They dropped that quickly.
Yeah, they dropped that quickly. But I haven't heard them say Canada's team once. Like, it's kind of lost its Canadian feel. Do you still feel like everyone's cheering for the Oilers, or maybe less so this time?
I don't know. I mean, you guys are the ones running the show out of Toronto. You tell me.
It is quieter. I don't know why. Maybe it's the lack of commercial. But
get your dad on a commercial.
It feels like there's the expectation that the Oilers should be there. And when the Oilers are there, then people will make the decision. But maybe that's me putting my own spin on it.
Yeah, listen, I never tell fans how to fan because I get in for free and they pay giant dollars. So do what you want. You know, as a Canadian, like, you know, I was at game 7 in 2011 when the Leafs were playing, or the Canucks were playing the Bruins. And I'm a journalist. I wasn't cheering for the Canucks, but I would have loved to have seen them win that thing, you know. I mean, man, oh, man. And I'm the same with Toronto. That poor fan base out in Toronto, like, gosh, do they deserve some success? I'd love to see Toronto win a cup, So I don't know how you get to the point. I'd say this. Edmonton's not a hateable team. They're not a bunch of divers. They're not, you know, they got a couple guys you don't mind watching every night. They kind of play a relatively pretty honest game, I would say. They're not a team that you want to hate. So if you're not cheering for them, I guess you have a right to cheer for whoever you want. But I don't really get it, Canadians who cheer against the last Canadian team, you guys. I don't get that.
Okay, out of Toronto, we'll do our best here over the next couple of weeks to have that energy in the right direction. But despite, you know, maybe most people or some people preferring the Edmonton Oilers, the most likely thing based on the scores right now is Dallas and Florida, which I guess would be to the chagrin of many north of the border. But, you know, for it to get there, if the Oilers do trip up, why will the result be different this time? I know Mikko Rantanen is a new and great and shiny addition for the Dallas Stars, but in what ways are they better? In what ways will what would the rationale be? What would be the reason why Dallas will change the result this year compared to what they were last year?
I mean, for one, they were 0 for, I think you had that stat almost right. They were 0 for 14. The Stars were in the power play last season against Edmonton. And this year they've already scored 3 goals. So how about there? How about they win a special teams battle they got crushed on a year ago and lost in 6 games? How about Dallas win? If Dallas continues to win that to this degree, they will win the series. So I guess I'll go there. I don't think, you know, Dallas is better. They got Rantanen. I think Edmonton's better. They're deeper. I don't think that, the last year, Ottinger's always supposed to be better than Skinner. We'd all say that he is a better goalie than Skinner. But in the series last year, he wasn't. So, you know, they're pretty tight. They're pretty close teams. Dallas is in this thing the last 3 years of the Western Final. Edmonton's in it 3 of the last 4 years. So you can't tell me there's an appreciable difference between these two teams. So it'll come down to some small things. And let's start with special teams. If Edmonton doesn't turn that special team thing around here, and that includes a power play that hadn't been very good, that would be a route to not advancing for sure.
All right, Speck, we'll let you get your cowboy boots on and head down to the game.
Hey, you like my Fred Flintstone tie?
Yeah, it's really nice. You got did somebody give you a fashion budget? Because you got new glasses, Fred Flintstone tie, all dolled up.
Always looking good for you two.
Thank you so much. Well, we enjoy you coming on. So hopefully it's a long series. We'll get to chat soon. Thanks.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks so much. It's Mark Spector, Sportsnet. Ready to go. Yeehaw.
You're not old enough for the Flintstones, are you?
I remember the Flintstones. Yabba-dabba-doo!
You certainly do.
Yeah. It was good times with their little car with the feet.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was, it was Bam Bam was the little one, right?
That sounds right.
I think I was Bam Bam once for Halloween too.
Okay. So then you're definitely into the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Vitamins too, you know?
Yeah. So I definitely remember having my Flintstones vitamins. It was like candy. There's no way those are healthy.
And they're not even, they don't even taste that good.
I thought they tasted pretty good actually.
I mean, if that's the candy you enjoy.
No, it was like a cheat.
If it's all you could get, though.
I'll have a couple extras, vitamins. Mom. Like, you know, tastes good. Okay.
Suddenly B12 is through the roof.
Definitely. Just like David Amber, he takes B12 shots.
Does he? Is that the secret to?
Yeah, they talk about it like all that? The time on the Fan Hockey Show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, try listening. Edmonton Dallas 8 p.m. tonight. Specs got you covered. A couple good
didn't
articles.
They take a live call today?
They did, yeah.
Luke Robitaille live?
Luke Robitaille called Mike Feuda.
They're full
today.
Of surprises. I should be listening.
You should. It's fun. You never know what's going to happen. Okay, so that's our Sportsnet game tonight on 8 p.m. with a 7:30 pregame. But we've got Jays and Rays kicking off also Sportsnet 1. That will be a 7 p.m. start. It's Jays, Rays, 3-game set kicking off on the road. It's the first time we're going to see them at the minor league stadium.
Yeah, and the Blue Jays got a minor league pitcher. I'm just kidding. But it will be Eric Lauer versus
Eric
Drew
Lauer
Rasmussen.
Slander.
Hey, I mean, listen, it's not the best offering for the Blue Jays, but Berríos and Bassett will follow. So hopefully Vladdy can do the thing that he does in minor league parks, which is absolutely mash.
I'm betting on that tonight.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it, by the way.
Fun.
The trop wasn't, you know, the easiest on the eyes.
Yeah.
It's something new to look at and experience and feel.
I agree
I'm
with
down
that.
For it.
Okay, Luke Fox is going to join us on the other side of the break. We could take that break now.
Sure.
All right. Let's take that break now. We'll come back. We'll chat with Luke. We'll do our best bets, and we'll wrap up for the weekend. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 with Fan Alish and Justin. Later on, we've got Edmonton-Dallas Game 2. Dallas with the 1-0 series lead. That's on Sportsnet, 8 p.m. puck drop. We got Toronto and the Rays, the Blue Jays and the Rays. Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Sportsnet 1. In about 30 minutes, we're going to chat with Luke Fox in a few minutes, who will help us go through some of the discussion today from MLSC and Keith Pelley, which, you know, could impact a lot of things in the MLSC ecosystem and has already affected the Toronto Maple Leafs in general. We'll get to that with our friend Luke Fox in a few minutes. But let's do a quick check-in on where we're at with our favorite bet, the Conn Smythe.
Okay.
Because at this point, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like it's the Florida Panthers by a landslide going to Stanley Cup final. I don't see any pushback from that Hurricanes team. It's tough to watch.
No, they look pretty broken. It's going to be really tough to get one win in Florida in Sunrise, given what we've seen.
What if they get swept again?
I don't know.
What happens?
I don't know. But they probably don't have to do what, you know, the Maple Leafs have done here.
But people are booing last night, and then on Twitter, everyone's like, maybe we were too hard on the Leafs.
It's hard to equate these two things, but like, yeah, probably something should happen in Carolina. I don't know what. I mean, everyone, you know, worships at the altar of Eric Tulsky
and Rod Brendamore.
A lot of people worship at the altar of Rod Brendamore. Maybe more people, honestly. Mm-hmm. The cross section's probably a little bit stronger for him. I don't know. I look at this roster every single year and think, well, they don't have enough. I know they play a great style. I know they play a winning style, especially, you know, a round winning style, if we want to use, fighting parlance. Like, yeah, they're going to win a ton of regular season games because they play the way that they play. But when you run into a great team and they can figure you out and they can match you and all the good things that you do, well, the high-end skill is going to take over. And that's what's going on in this Florida series, even when it's not necessarily...
It's even Florida depth that's taking over.
Yeah, they're the same. And there are many ways they're the same team in that they could rely on just as many lines and just as many people. It's just that the players in the Florida Panthers are better and they have more talent and they have more ability to put the puck in the net. And a guy like Sam Bennett is proving that he can be a really hot commodity, not for himself this summer and for teams that are looking to add a potential Conn Smythe winner.
We can't
go too far down this road because, you know, if you listen to this, we're very, very invested in Sam Bennett, and I don't want this
to be
Bennett propaganda. I would not bet him at 20-1, but I will say, just compared to a goal scorer from a couple years ago, Jonathan Marchessault in 2023, won the Conn Smythe Trophy with the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. He did that based on his goal total. He scored 13 goals in 22 games. He scored 13 of the 88 goals scored by the Vegas Golden Knights. That was 14.7% of the total goals scored by Vegas. Sam Bennett scored his 8th and 9th goal last night, so he's 4 goals behind Jonathan Marchessault in 8 fewer games. He's scored at a greater rate so far than Jonathan Marchessault. He's got 9 of the 55 total Panthers goals. That's 16.3%. So he is... technically been the more efficient goal scorer for his team up until this point, and that's a guy who won the Conn Smythe Trophy a couple of years ago. If he scores 6 goals in the required 6 wins to get the Stanley Cup, to get back-to-back Stanley Cups, that would be 15. That would be 2 more than Marchessault. And the reason why maybe Marchessault won is that there wasn't a great candidate otherwise. The only difference is that I think Sergei Bobrovsky is a pretty great candidate right now.
Yeah, if he keeps putting up shutouts, that's not going to happen.
But, you know, we like the Conn Smythe Trophy. We like to break it down. We like to try and figure out if we can get ahead of it. And right now, as you mentioned, it is Florida, and then it's everyone else. And right now, it seems like it's Sergei Bobrovsky, Sam Bennett, and everybody else. And we'll see if Sam Bennett can do the thing for us.
Yeah, and we got him previously. If you listen to our show, we talked about Sam Bennett 4 weeks ago. We put it up on our television screens for you, and the price was 460-1.
And again, just to remind you and me, we can't make this the Sam Bennett propaganda show.
I'm just telling you.
We set our piece today.
We set our piece, and we will watch as it all unfolds, as we did today when we watched Luke Fox ask a really great question to Keith Pelley, and Keith Pelley said, "That's a great question, Luke."
How'd
and
that
then
feel,
I'm
Luke?
Watching, and I go, "Yeah, that's Luke." Like,
the
I
boss?
Gave a fist bump on my couch. I was like, "That's our guy, Luke." So welcome in, Luke Fox. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're good. We were proud of you today. I always feel good feel? When
Come
one
on.
Of our
Give
guys asks a question.
I can't take full credit. I had a conversation with Sammy McKee.
Oh, and come on, Sammy.
He's the diehard Leaf fan, right? So, but I really liked where he was going, because I do feel like there's been a fracturing between the organization and the fan base. So, it's going to be interesting to see what Keith Pelley does, because he did say that, you know, that's something they're going to really look at over the summer, and he at least recognizes that there needs to be some repairing there.
So Sam got in your ear, maybe he got in Keith Pelley's ear to a certain extent,
yeah,
right?
Maybe.
Because I haven't really heard anyone talk about, I mean, maybe it's reached its boiling point, but who cares? I think was kind of the messaging and not even really addressed previously. Like, the team is the team, the fans are the fans. They're always both going to be there, and they're always both going to be, I guess, chasing the same thing. But Keith Pelley making it a priority to sort of bridge the gap here. And I didn't even really know until sweaters are hitting the ice and beers are hitting the ice that there was a major thing here. But this, I guess, has bubbled over, and it is, at least in the important boardrooms, a priority, which I do think is a great thing, and Sam will be very happy about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the Panthers had a role in this, right? When Brad Marchand and Matthew Tkachuk come out and say, oh, I don't know how these guys do it with all the pressure the fan base is putting on them. And I really think that was skewing from the issue, right? The issue is the hockey team can't get past the second round. The fans care. They want them to go far. And the reason why there were boos and a couple of beers and jerseys chucked on the ice in game 7 is because, you know, that there was this belief amongst the fan base that this was the core to get it done, to finally bring a cup to Toronto. And failure after failure after failure, either first round or second round, they're getting fed up. And it is interesting that the man in charge at least recognizes that maybe we need to bridge that gap. I also found it interesting that he pointed out the age of the average fan in the building is so much higher than the age of the fan that's really passionate outside in Maple Leaf Square. And, you know, a lot of that, I think, has to do with pricing. But there is a generation here that doesn't even know what a conference final looks like. And you assume the Leaf fans are always going to be there, but the organization has to do something to engage that younger fan for sure.
Yeah, he mentioned like 50% of fans have never even been into Scotiabank Arena. And then something about like a fan access program where they're going to be giving away more tickets. Like, I don't know we don't need to get down this rabbit hole, but like that is appealing, I'm sure, to fans that are listening that want to go to games that can't usually afford the prices of some of these games. Like, is that a focus that we're going to see next season and having more opportunity, not even just to get to the building, but to hear from the players, like to have the players more accessible, I think is an important role. Have them come on our show, maybe like be involved.
Yeah. Well, Pelley's a media guy, right? He has some background in media. So he brought that up on his own. Like, I think the players need to be a little bit more accessible to the media, and whether it's your show, I know there's other shows on other networks and other shows on our network that have tried to get, you know, more one-on-ones, and it hasn't worked. So I guess we'll see. But, you know, if that's the message from the top, things could be a little bit different that way next season.
Yeah, the fan access movement is a cool thing. I didn't know much about it. Still don't know all that much about it, but looking forward to hearing more. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be Steve Ballmer style where they're going to have 150 new fans in sort of the same section, but boy, would that be cool. Like, it would change the vibe at Scotiabank Arena if you had 150 first-timers all sitting together. I think that would be unbelievable. So we'll see how they deal with that, and we'll see if Pelley can make some inroads there in making it a little bit different inside the barn. What did you make of the general tone today from Pelly? There was some optimism. There was some, hey, we were close, which is frustrating sometimes. But it felt like, I don't know if he struck the right balance, but it felt like there was some optimism there and almost optimism that kind of cooled everyone down just a little bit. What did you make of it?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I don't know if there was much to take from it. One of the biggest things I think I took away from it is how much power Brad Treliving and Craig Berube are going to have now. That was my big takeaway. It was interesting that right after, a couple hours after he let Shanahan go, he went and had dinner with Berube. And multiple times, because there was the press conference and then we also scrummed with Keith afterwards. And multiple times he said, you know, Craig Berube is a great resource for Treliving to use. And I'm a firm believer that in sports teams, the head coach should have a big say. You know, when he referenced soccer over in England and he referenced, you know, NFL football, where often, you know, the head coach has a big, powerful voice. So I wonder if Berube is more comfortable using his voice now that Shanahan's gone. Not that there was ever a disconnect there, but it seems like Pelly's going to be encouraging Berube and Treliving to work together even stronger in some of the off-ice stuff. Now, he does anyway. Like, Berube would have told Brad, you know, what he thinks they need at the trade deadline. I think we all knew he was a big Braden Schenn guy.
Yes.
Most head coaches work with the GM, but I did find it interesting just how much Pelly underscored that. And now there's no Shanahan, so this is the Treliving and Berube era. That was my sense leaving today.
Yeah, and I think the first thing I thought of when I also came to that conclusion that, like, hey, Berube and Treliving have more power now is Berube's comments right away after the game, or I think he was asked, or at his press conference the other day, like, yes, I want to have Marner and Tavares back. Like, I know you have to say that. Obviously, I'd be like, yeah, we could probably get rid of one of them. But if he wants that, how much closer to running it back are we maybe understanding this new streamlined approach, knowing that the head coach and maybe the GM also want these players back?
Yeah, well, Berube can say that all he wants, but Mitch Marner decides whether he's coming back. Like, that, he earned this leverage, right? Just like he earned the no move, he made it through, you know, the season healthy, and now the free agency window is right there. He's going to take a peek. So, you know, the coach may want to back. You know, coaches and GMs often don't want to let talent walk for free, but Marner's positioned himself that he can. So it you know, Berube can wish that all he wants. It's up to Mitch. We know John wants to be back. I think that one's just going to come down to how low is he willing to lower his price to stay? Because that, in that instance, I think the club has a lot of leverage, and it's going to be fascinating just how much Treliving tries to squeeze the former captain here.
Yeah, on the Berube influence thing, it's pretty interesting, right? Because, you know, it's not so long ago, Dubas and Mike Babcock are, like, actively fighting through roster decisions, at least it seemed, and there's so much friction, at least between the two and what one of them wanted and what one of them was willing to provide. And that just seemed like, how was that ever going to work the way it should work? And with this, like, this, you know, the back class of Keith Pelly is interesting, right? Because you mentioned it with the football and with global football and all the things that he's done, and he's seen sport, you know, operated differently. And we've gotten to this world now in the NHL where, yeah, everyone's got a president and everyone's got a general manager and the coach just coaches whatever the team is. And there's so many people involved. And I wonder if just taking back to the basics of a coach and a general manager sharing a vision and putting a roster together might actually be the way to go. So this is an interesting strategy, one that's obviously, you know, there's other factors like how much it costs to have 25 people in the executive room. But we'll see how Berube and Treliving can make a different imprint on this roster together. Treliving wasn't around, hasn't been around. Mm-hmm. He's at his daughter's graduation in Calgary, yeah. I believe. We got to hear from him soon here, though. So there's going to be another work day for you, I imagine, in the coming days.
They won't let me go. Yeah. So it's press conference season. So he's in Calgary at his daughter's graduation. The plan is for him to meet with Pelly Sunday evening. And I would expect there's going to be a Treliving press conference at some point next week, where surely the Marner question, surely the Tavares question. Where do things stand with Matthew Nyes, who's an RFA? You know, how deep do the cuts go to the core here? Is he willing to put other pieces on the table? So that one will be more interesting from the actual roster construction point of view, for sure.
I want to ask you about Matthew Nyes, because there's a lot of dialogue online about whether they should do a bridge or like a max term extension, how much he might cost. Like, how do you think they should approach this? Obviously try to lock him up long term. How do you think he wants to approach it?
Well, he was asked and he's not tipping his hand. You know, I think if you're Matthew Nyes, there is a case for the bridge deal. You know, a guy like Evan Bouchard is coming out of his bridge this off season. And he was so good in those 2 years, right? He's putting up so much points that people are comparing him to like Paul Coffey style numbers in the playoffs, right? So now he's positioned himself to knock it out of the park. So if you're Nyes' agent, there is a case to bet on yourself, especially if you're still getting PP1 time, if you're still on the first line, if you feel like there's room to grow and pile up even more points. There's an argument for that. If you're Bradtree Living, especially if Marner walks and you have a little more cash to spend, mm-hmm. I'd say lock this guy up for as long as possible, as quick as possible. He's very unique. The Leafs don't have a lot of guys like him coming at all. Most teams don't have a guy like him. And the cap, because it's going to keep spiking and spiking, get him under contract as soon as possible for as long as possible. That's what I think the club will aim to do.
What did you make of the pressure comments? One of the lead items for Keith Pelly was talking about mm-hmm. the pressure that the
privilege.
Maple Leafs feel. Pressure is a privilege. Story about his son and, you know, feeling the pressure and admitting to feeling the pressure. Not that he had any stake on what happened on the ice or actually influence of what happened on the ice. I guess another example, Luke, of him listening to the discourse around this team right now.
Oh, yeah. He's very aware. And I think I almost think it's important that he was in the building for Game 7. Like, he felt it.
In seats, like, too. Not in a press box, right? In seats.
Yeah, and it was, like, such a wild scene. The only thing that I could even compare it to was I got to go to John Tavares' return game to the island, mm-hmm. and that felt very visceral. Like, the whole crowd got very angry, and you really felt the emotion that night in a negative way. And that's the only night I've been in a hockey arena that could compare to Game 7. You know, multiple sweaters chucked over the glass. Marner literally had to dodge a sweater before he skated off, before his last shift as a Maple Leaf, quite possibly. You know, the beers, the constant booing that began in the second period. You know, a mock "Let's go Blue Jays" chant. Like it was a wild, wild scene. So the fact that Pelly was there and felt it and heard it and was probably very embarrassed. I mean, this is the team he runs now, even though he's been on the job a very short time. I don't think it's a leap to say, you know, that the way it went down, not just the fact that they didn't make it to the conference final, but the way they lost and the way the crowd reacted and the emotion of that night helped lead to his decision to let Shanahan go.
We haven't specifically asked you about Shanahan. Maybe a two-part question. Like, what's going to be your lasting memory or legacy of his time with the Maple Leafs? And, you know, I saw today that the Islanders hired a GM, so doesn't look like that's going to be his landing spot. Like, what do you think he wants to do next?
Yeah, I think he wants back in. I wouldn't rule him out. I don't know how the Islanders are totally going to structure
kind of
their... Like, maybe there's a president role, because I don't think he wants to be a GM, Shanahan. I think he likes, you know, the upper level, overseeing things a bit more big picture, and likes being a sounding board for the GM. But so I wouldn't rule out the Islanders quite yet. My understanding is he does has always maintained a place in the New York area. Of course, he played for the Rangers, worked for the league office there, played for the Devils. So his connections there are pretty strong. I would expect him wanting to get back in the game. He's a competitive guy, even though he's hung up the skates long ago. But his legacy is, you know, there's some good. I really think he did a lot of work in terms of bringing the alumni closer to the team. That's a positive. You know, he changed the logo. He, you know, provided some stability. He was there when they won the draft lottery. There was a lot of good, but I do think a lot of people will look back at stubbornness towards the end in terms of not willing to break up the core of saying, we just got to keep knocking at the door and eventually we'll barge through it. And that never happened. So I think he will go down as a guy that refused to deviate when there was mounting evidence that the mix wasn't right.
So it may be streamlined, but maybe contrary to popular belief, like Brendan Shanahan did a lot, right? There's a lot of things that would fall under his purview up until the end. And, you know, if they are taking away from just the amount of people working in that area, like it feels like there's a lot, maybe more than Pelly was leading, willing to lead on, that will fall on his plate, right? Like if this team is going for a culture change or is trying to change its culture, trying to be better with the fans, trying to be better with the media, you can't ask Brad Treliving to just handle the entire roster with Craig Berube and also spearhead those items. Does it feel like, despite Pelly, you know, putting a little bit of cold water on it, that there is a ton on his plate and he will have an unbelievably instrumental voice and leading role in changing the culture, if that is indeed a priority?
That Pelly will?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think he wants that. I think
he said, I only want to be a sounding board, or I'm a sounding board, but it feels like he's going to have to be way more than a sounding board is where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I think he means a sounding board maybe for some of the hockey decisions. He really wants to leave that to Treliving and Shane Doan, Brendan Pridham, like the guys who know hockey best. But for sure, in terms of the culture, he wants to have a heavy say. And he's a firm believer that, you know, a strong culture leads to winning.
Sorry, a little brain fart.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so Berube, last thing on Berube. So we know him and Trilling are going to work in tandem and put this roster together. What do you think? We'll put Marner aside. We'll put Tavares aside, because those are conversations that, I guess, or at least things that Tavares and Marner have to decide for themselves. Tavares being, how little am I going to take? Marner, do I want to be here anymore? If there's a priority one for the tandem that is Berube and Treliving putting together this hockey team, what do you think it is this summer?
Brad Marchand.
Yeah, well, I think it's forwards that aren't just skilled, that have an edge to them, that have playoff type will. So Brad Marchand would fit that bill. My understanding is Brad wants to get a real payday, and that might mean Brad might have to go to a team that doesn't fancy itself a contender.
Oh, I can't see
But he did say that he grew up a Leafs fan. He was campaigning.
He did grow up a Leafs fan. And I'm sure, you know, Treliving will explore all options. It's hard for me to envision him wearing the Maple Leaf.
Oh, boy, yeah.
But it was also hard for me to envision the Bruins flipping him to the Panthers that eliminated them 2 years in a row. So Sam Bennett, I think we're going to, if he doesn't re-up in Florida, we're going to hear that name. Aaron Ekblad. I mean, he's already taken three Panthers. I think he wants to go get some more. But, you know, a lot of the focus will be like, oh, who's available now? Who's available now? Let's think 2 years ahead. And think about that, the 26 class.
Connor McDavid.
I'm just saying, you would not be doing your job if you didn't at least contemplate what it would take.
I've seen that tweet circling around on how great that free agency class is going to be, and I liked it a few times.
Maybe keeping the powder dry is important. Like, that's the thing. Like, if there's going to be another press conference next year at this time because not enough was done, but then you're trying to make yourself at least malleable ahead of that free agent class, like, I don't know. It'll be interesting how they dance around this and whether or not they can keep some of the powder dry leading into 2026.
Okay, Luke, well, you've already worked so many days overtime. We appreciate you coming on the show tonight. I'm sure there'll be another day coming up soon. Well, you'll have to ask some more great questions at a press conference, and we'll be cheering you on from behind the screen.
All right.
Thanks
have
so
a good
much,
night,
Luke.
Guys. All right. Thanks for having me.
That's Luke Fox of Sportsnet mentioning that, I think it's Sunday that Berube and Treliving and Pelly are going to meet.
I think they're having dinner. Yeah.
Nice. And then maybe next week we'll have another press conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we got to hear from Treliving, right?
I think
we
so.
Can't. I still think there's so much to decide. Like, if you're, again, streamline is like such a buzzword right now, and I guess that's justifiably so. But there are so many people that work there, and like, I don't know how it's all going to look at the end of the day. But we know that Pelly wants the two guys, Berube and Treliving, to run hockey operations, and that Pelly wants to be basically in charge of everything else. And I don't know what that means for the millions of people, it seems, that work in that office, but you know,
some will be Brendan Shanahan supporters, just like when Dubas left. A lot of Dubas sites.
It feels like there's more Dubas holdovers than there are Shanahan holdovers. Well, but
might be time for some.
We'll
change.
See. Very quickly, just like the other Toronto sports teams, the other MLSE teams, I think it's interesting, just in comparison to the Leafs, because Masai Ujiri is the guy, but he is or was akin or was in the same class of employee as Brendan Shanahan, president, right? So is there going to be, if they revisit how much streamlining needs to be done with the Raptors, do you trust Bobby Webster the same way you do Brad Treliving? And I guess the same could be said for the Jays, not MLSE, but, you know, Rogers having control over all of this very imminently, we believe. Atkins is in the Shanahan level, and Shapiro is in the Shanahan level, and Atkins would be the one that you're like, not so sure, right?
Yeah.
And you may not be sure about either of them, but I think there would be more of an appetite to trust in Shapiro than it would be Atkins. So I think it's a little different with the Leafs, and we'll see how that affects both the Raptors and the Blue Jays in time.
Yeah, I think fair enough. There's a lot of questions about that today at the press conference, and, you know, he can't make those decisions like wide sweeping. Okay, no more presidents anymore, but he'll be probably keeping close tabs on how Masai Ujiri performs and if that position needs to happen. And Masai's always rumored to like be going somewhere else anyway. Yeah,
you don't want the, hey, why do they get a president?
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird conversation.
That's right. The Raptors, like, they get a president, and the Leafs, we don't get a president. I think it's all going to work out. Okay, some best bets before we wrap.
President FOMO.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Oilers -110 for me on the money line tonight. I think they get back into the series. We talked about it with Speck a little earlier on. Like, I think the idea that they're long and gone from this, and the fact that 97 and, you know, Draisaitl aren't going to pick it up tonight, I don't believe in it. I think the Oilers will win tonight, and it's a pick 'em basically, -110 for each team. And I'm going to go with a Vlad home run as well, playing their first time at the new temporary minor league ballpark in Tampa Bay. And I like him to just crush like he did in Dunedin.
Doing that all weekend, I assume? Vladdy +470?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
Okay. Vladdy can go yard at least once to make sure that is indeed profitable. We talked about Sam Bennett, and the Conn Smythe Trophy is 20-1. Again, probably wouldn't have bet it at 20-1 given what Bob has done and where Bob is at with the .910 save percentage and 3 shutouts through 2 rounds and change.
Yep.
But Sam Bennett is a guy that we are watching. As for tonight, I like the Pacers +6. Take the Pacers and the points. I think there's going to be a lot of nervous energy at Madison Square Garden. The Knicks need to win this game. The Knicks are probably still reeling after the events of game 1 and the miracle comeback by the Indiana Pacers. I think the Pacers are going to be in this game. I will take the points, maybe a little money.
Yeah, no, I think this will be a close game. I hope it is. This has been such a fun series. It's been one game. And another one at the Garden tonight. Can there be another miracle moment? Will we get an iconic Tyrese Haliburton buzzer beater, which I bet on? That would be enjoyable as well.
We always leave you a minute for P-Dub news. What's the
minute
latest
for P-Dub news? Okay. Both general managers of the new expansion teams named. Kara Morey will be the Vancouver general manager. I actually
had any relation
quite a relationship with Kara Morey. No. She was the former Princeton head coach while I was getting recruited, and she recruited me, and unfortunately I did not pick Princeton.
You said no to her?
I did say no to her. She's a serious lady, so they got a good one in Kara Morey. She was 14 years at Princeton, and she also played at Brown, but I also think it's interesting the Princeton girls that are currently playing, Filliate, Connors, Thompson, might be going to Vancouver. And then Megan Turner, who's the GM of Seattle, I also played against her at Quinnipiac and in the NCAA and CWHL. She was the assistant general manager of the Boston Fleet, so she's moving over to Seattle. So both great hockey minds. Good to see women in those positions.
So are you running the 9th CWHL team?
Sign me up. Let's put it in.
All of your colleagues.
Let's put it in Sutton, Ontario.
There you go. New career arc for Sarah Filliate? Wasn't she supposed to be a Scepter?
Yeah, no, she might. She could be a Vancouver.
Oh.
No, she'll probably want to be a Scepter. Anyway. Okay. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. We're off Monday because the Jays play at 4, so long weekend for us. Hope you enjoy it. Hopefully there's sun.